Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Alrighty. Hey there, Madigan.
Oh, hey.
So today is a twofer. We usually split up our episodes and do like one on a Thursday night and then one on like a Sunday morning. But we're going to do it old school the way we used to and do them back to back.
Yep. It's just like the old days when we could be in the same room with each other, you know?
Yeah, except not at all.
Do you remember the last time we recorded together? I remember I didn't take my microphone and we were like, okay, well maybe there's like one more week of us being able to get together before shit goes to hell. And then it was like the next day I was like, can I go pick up my microphone?
I'd had a feeling, I remember, because I had a feeling when you were over here recording, I was like, maybe take your microphone just in case. Like I was like, take it just in case. And then you know, it just slipped your mind whenever you left or whatever.
Which
and
is then, what like, always happens with me.
It was literally the next day that the governor was like, yeah, we're shutting down. We're not seeing anyone. So you drove by and I came and like dropped it off and you were sick, but not from COVID.
Yeah.
And so I remember like, even though people people were freaking out, okay? Because that was the time whenever like
nobody knew anything.
Yeah. And like grocery stores were totally shut down and there were the big long lines. But still, like we were going to give each other a hug. Like when I gave you the microphone, but you were like, I'm sick. Don't hug me.
Yeah, exactly.
But it wasn't COVID.
It wasn't COVID. Yeah. But I'm still just like, don't fucking hug me just in case. Like I know I don't have COVID, but my God, don't get sick right now and weaken that immune system.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It just feels like forever ago.
It was. I mean, it was like, isn't that crazy? Because my birthday's in March.
Yeah.
My birthday was the first weekend that we were fully on lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And my half birthday is in September. So it has been almost 6 months.
Yep.
So that's what's up.
That is what's up. Yeah. It's crazy. I feel like I have that discussion with Max just about every day where, you know, time is going so slowly yet so quickly at the same time and everything blends together. Like I have a very hard time telling people when things happened because it all seems like the same month or the same time. It's just like 2020 is just its own.
It's like a watercolor of just like everything is meshed up.
Yeah. There's no months. There's no seasons. There's no anything. We're just living in 2020 and it's a
weird
the
only reason we
place.
Know there are seasons is because it's hot as balls here. I know you guys are probably sick of us saying how hot it is, but it is really hot. And I just heard today that Dunkin' Donuts has already released their pumpkin spice.
What?
For the season. And I'm like, you guys, it's 100 degrees. Why?
That's insane. I was just thinking, though, because I worked at Starbucks during the holiday season, and I love all the holiday Starbucks stuff.
I'm
really looking forward to their pumpkin cream cheese muffin. I hope they get it again this year.
Here we go.
I get a pumpkin spice latte and a pumpkin cream cheese muffin. And I'm not even like a sweet coffee drinker, but I just get one pump of pumpkin spice in my latte. That's all I need. Mwah, it's perfect.
I'm very excited for fall, actually. I'm kind of excited for fall.
Although I just got a lot of really cute summer clothes, and I'm kind of like, I don't want to stop wearing my cute up. Like summer dresses that I got.
This is the first summer in years that I have not bought a new swimsuit because I am a swimsuit addict. Like, I have, like, I don't know, maybe 15 swimsuits. Like, I have a lot of swimsuits.
Oh my gosh.
And I buy new ones every year, and I didn't this year because what are we doing? I mean, I hang out by my pool, but other than that, it's like I'm not going anywhere. So.
Yeah. I think for me, just because I still have to get dressed every day, it's definitely like I've still kept up with some of my shopping behaviors just because, like, you know, I used to be one of those people that could stay, if I had a day off, I could just stay in my pajamas all day. I would never get changed unless I like showered or, you know, had to go somewhere. But if I wasn't leaving the house, I would just stay in my like chill clothes. And now I really like getting up in the morning and getting dressed, even if I don't have anywhere to go. I just like feeling put together. And I've been going on Poshmark like crazy, where I can get like new clothes for like 10-15 bucks.
It's See, great. That's good, because I'm about to blow my entire paycheck on Fabletics, because like all I'm doing is living in like workout clothes. Because I'm like, I feel put together. First of all, I am working out now, so I'm not just strictly athleisure wear. But I
that's why also, I can't. I feel like such a like a traitor if I buy like I can't buy athleisure wear.
Because you should. Even if you're not working out, you should, because it feels like upscaled pajamas. You know what I mean? Where it's like you feel put together, especially if you're in like a matching set, but you are still in stretchy, comfy clothes.
See, so, for me, that's how I endorse it. That's how I am with dresses, with like light. Like short sundresses, just very thin, nothing special.
My thighs rub together. It's a problem.
Oh, yeah. I just, for me, it's like, it feels like I'm just wearing barely anything. Like, I wear just the thinnest dresses I can find without them being see-through. Mm.
I love a house dress.
Yeah. Oh, I have so many. But no, nothing's a house dress anymore, and nothing is just an outside thing. Everything is everything now. So
that's right. Welcome to 2020. That's how we do it here.
Well, so, now that we've rambled for about 5.5 minutes, let's get this episode started.
Let's do it. So I wanted to start off actually by saying that what sparked our interest in doing this topic, this is something that had never been on my mind to do as an episode topic, but is very much a part of my lived experience, especially not only as a Black woman, but also as a actor. I cannot tell you the number of times my mom, God bless her, she means well, and I know exactly what she's saying, and it's not her fault for thinking these things, but, you know, she will watch all those Hallmark movies at Christmas, and she'll be like, Keegan, why aren't you in these Hallmark movies? She's like, it's never she's like, because, and this is what she told me, she's like, you should be in these Hallmark movies because they always have a Black friend. They always have a Black friend, and you could be that. That could be your role.
Yeah, I totally see what your mom is going for, because especially, like, having, you know, being an actor as well and going through all of that, I used to get, obviously not the Black best friend, but I used to always get that I am not an ingenue. I'm not a leading lady. I'm like the quirky sidekick, which is literally what I felt like my entire life to all my beautiful blonde best friends that I've had throughout my life. I'm like, great, thanks. Now I won't even be cast as the leading lady. Fine.
Right. I mean, and we could have an entire episode talking about typecasting and all of those things, those issues that exist specifically for women, for everyone, but specifically for women within Hollywood and that industry, absolutely. But we saw, or I posted to my stories, I want to give her credit. So there was a kind of like Instagram slideshow that was like, let's talk about the Black best friend. Mm-hmm. And it was posted by a person named By Sahra. So B-Y-S-A-H-R-A, if you want to go check out their page.
Is it Sahra or Sarah?
It is Sahra. So okay. S-A-H-R-A.
Oh, I see. I thought I, never mind.
Yeah, so Sahra. So definitely go and check out their page. There's really cool stuff on that page, and that is what sparked our idea or interest in doing this topic, because I put it in my stories, and then Madigan wrote into me.
Yep.
In my DMs.
I'm like, Keegan, I'm such a big fan. You know, it would be a really great idea for an episode talking about the Black best friend.
But that is what you said.
It is what I said, but I didn't write in as a fan, although I am a big fan of yours.
Thank you so much. Oh my God. Right back at you. Okay, so that is what we're going to be talking about today. And my notes, while they are centered around the Black best friend, in my opinion, that Black best friend stereotype also very closely intersects with the sassy Black woman, angry Black woman,
the magical
stereotype.
Negro also, yeah, I feel so like.
Those things will come in. By Sahra also does have a slideshow on the magical Negro, mm-hmm. specifically, if you want to check that out. But I'm going to be talking, or we're going to be talking about kind of all of those things. They're referred to as all of those things, and they do kind of work hand in hand.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to start this episode with a little bit of another discussion that I think just kind of ties into the context of what it means to be or have a Black best friend, what that means in society, the defenses that a lot of white people use. So this is something that was
why
very,
white people have defenses. I don't understand about something that really doesn't, is not theirs to get in up in arms about.
100%. And if you all listen to our episode that we did, our last full-length episode on Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, we talk about this a lot with Joe Biden, you know, talking about how he worked in an all-black swimming pool growing up, so he felt like he was involved in the civil rights movement, even though he really wasn't involved. He was just working at an all-black swimming
pool. He was just there.
He was just there.
And I think that that's so amazing that you bring him up. I think it's kind of perfect, or you bring that story up, because that is exactly kind of what the Black Best Friend is there to do, where it's just like, just by being in proximity, we're supposed to believe that the white protagonist is a good person.
Right. And that's exactly how we've viewed Biden. We've had this very picturesque view of Biden for so long because he was Obama's VP and we love Obama. So there is kind of this weird association as well with that friendship that I find is interesting. And I didn't even write anything about that in my notes. That was just off the top of my head.
No, it's perfect. I actually read, which is a good time for me to tell you my sources. So okay. I got stuff on tvtropes.org, a Guardian article, Afropunk, and a Bartleby essay. And in one of the things, I didn't write it down, I think it's tvtropes.org maybe, they were talking about how giving your hero a best friend from a different ethnicity tells the audience that he or she is relaxed about race and welcoming to all.
Yes.
And you get that perceived cool factor that comes from being close to a minority community. And when talking about Joe Biden, that's exactly what it is. It's like, we're supposed to believe that, like, oh, see, look how, like, comfortable he is around race, and look how cool he is because he has a cool black best friend
right.
in Barack Obama.
You right. know? So why this is so problematic is because it doesn't really put importance on personal relationships between a white and a black friend. The reason that this trope and this defense, you know, it doesn't work is because in order to truly have a close personal friendship with somebody, no matter what their race or background is, you get into those deep conversations and those deep personal conversations. And this article that I was reading from, I believe this was the LA Times, I didn't write it next to here, but they were talking about how, you know, when the white friend refuses to have blunt conversations about race and fails to acknowledge their racial differences, it is not only just harming their friendship, but it's harming their black friend. It's not giving them, it's not fulfilling the friendship in the way that it should be. So that was one of the first points that
yeah,
they made.
Yeah, it's almost never even brought up. It's like we're supposed to just believe, and very often, especially if it's female relationships, that you have this black friend who has this very sassy quality, who comes in with the comedic quips, who's never actually involved in any of the action typically. And so we're supposed to believe that this is your best friend, but you don't ever get invested in her life or his life in any kind of real way.
Exactly.
In that By Sara slideshow, she has a slide that says, don't you want more black characters? Why is this bad? In that they say black best friend characters exist solely for the development of the white character and are never given a chance to develop themselves. And this reduces blackness to a mere prop, reinforcing the idea that center stage is reserved for white people and that black characters are unworthy of having developed storylines.
And that is true in our lives. That's not just true in a writing room or in a casting office. It's true everywhere because our society constantly gives us messages that whiteness is ideal. So even when that white
and
person...
default.
Yes, it is. You know, we've talked about this before. You know, when reading a book and they don't describe a person as being typically, you know, black, or if they don't say that they're black in the book, you will automatically assume that the character is white. So it does give the white friend this false sense of superiority. And that is kind of what this comes from. It's kind of like, you know, that white saviorism at times. It's very much like an accessory.
Yes, I read it that it was the cinematic equivalent to saying some of my best friends are black.
Exactly.
Right? Whereas, like, not only is it an accessory, but it's also oftentimes, especially, you know, we talked about female characters, but with male characters in friendships, it is oftentimes an excuse for there to be a lot of, maybe a lot of black bad guys in the movie or TV show, and it's deemed okay because the white protagonist fighting the black bad guys has a black sidekick.
Right.
So it kind of like okays the entire situation and doesn't make you have to look at it any deeper than that, because we are assuming that a black person is signing off or co-signing
exactly
on whatever's happening.
Exactly. So then as the viewer, we don't have to question what's going on because we assume that everybody is okay with whatever's going on.
Right.
Yeah. And one other thing that this article talks about is that many times while a white person does discuss racism with their black friend, instead of listening and supporting, they make the conversation about themselves. And this is something that I point out in myself constantly. I never try to make things about myself, but I must have learned somewhere along the way that, you know, relating to people means sharing your experiences. And that's something that, like, in my adult life, I've worked really hard to shut up and listen, because I can talk all day. And I think I've gotten much better at it. Of like, I've always wanted to know what people had to say. I've never meant for it to be like I didn't care. But I've wanted to make sure that, especially with, you know, the people closest in my life, that I'm not talking over them, and make sure that, you know, they have the floor whenever they need anything from me. So while that's important if you are in, you know, an interracial friendship, it's always just important in general to just shut up and listen to what the person has to say.
I am the same way. I do the same kind of thing. Like, I do think that it is part of what was ingrained in us as far as like learning to be conversationalists,
yeah,
is to find things to communicate about. And very often for a lot of people, I feel like that means finding parallels in our experiences,
right,
which then sometimes means talking about myself, because then I talk about my own experiences. And it's something that I too have had to be conscious of and try and stop doing,
because yeah,
it's natural for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's definitely something I have to remind myself of a lot, because I am such a talker. And something you brought up that I think is more true when we're looking at the male friendships in TV and movies, that we see the white friend getting like a little too familiar. It starts to get to a point where they're maybe starting to kind of be ingrained in the group a little too much, and it's starting to get racist.
A lot of fist bumps. Yeah, there's a lot of fist bumps. There's a lot of like slang terms that maybe shouldn't exist.
Yeah, there's a lot of like black scent being put on. There's a lot of, you know, there's this thing about, you know, the white guy hanging out with a group of black guys. You know what I mean? That's this funny thing that we see a lot in movies.
Right. And these things are also harmful in real life, because I think a lot of black people can recognize, or, you know, other minorities, absolutely, probably members of the LGBTQ community, you know, Latinx community. I feel like very often, because of these portrayals on screen and these portrayals of these friendships, that white people might have a certain expectation about what being friends with you is going to be like.
Exactly.
And then you, and as a person of color, or like a minority person, a person from a minority group, you're an individual. You're not a monolith. You're not a stereotype. And you can feel sometimes when you feel like the other person isn't getting what they expected out of you. You're not black enough. You're not what they expected.
Right.
They wanted to add you to their deck of cool friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's part of why all of this stuff is kind of harmful.
It's incredibly harmful. And that's why I felt it so important to talk about the real stuff too. So from that LA Times article, there was another article from theroot.com that is entitled 7 Rules for White People with Black Friends. And it's very like, it's kind of like a parody article. There's lots of funny stuff in it, but I didn't write any of the funny
the
stuff
root.
Down.
Do you know who wrote it?
I wrote it down somewhere.
Let okay, it's okay if you don't know, but our friend Jay, who has the podcast, The Extraordinary
It was
Negroes,
not Jay.
It was not Jay?
It was okay. Michael Harriet. There we go.
Because he writes for The Root all the time.
Does
and it sounds like something that he would write. Yeah, he's a writer for The Root.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it was great. It was super funny, but I, you know, kind of focused on the realness that was hidden beneath the humor. So there are 7 rules. Number 1 is know the line. know that there are some black things you can't do, no matter how close you are to your black friend. And so that's kind of what
I was...
And
word is off the table.
Yeah, you cannot say... And that's actually one of the rules here. I believe that's number 4, so I'll skip ahead. Saying the N-word. He says, there's only 2 times when saying the N-word is appropriate. And I was like, what? So this is what he says. If the word is being discussed, which I, even for me, I'm kind of like, I wouldn't personally say it.
I still think it's unnecessary to say it when you could just say the N-word.
Yeah. Exactly. And then the other time he said that it's acceptable is if you are acting in a legitimate movie or a play or artistic production in some way, not just on like YouTube or I was about to say Vine, but I guess TikTok.
gosh, we're old.
I know, right? I was
Vine.
Vine? Oh my God. What is it? 2013? What? So, and that makes a lot of sense to me because I've talked about this on the show when I was in the play Hair. I had to say that word twice and one time completely by myself. And when it was in the group, I never said it unless it was for the show. And then when I had to say it by myself, I had that friend that like wouldn't cut me off. So I was supposed to just say the beginning of it and then he cut me off and he wouldn't cut me off. And I got very mad at him in rehearsal one day.
Right. If he was supposed to cut you off, then he should have.
Yeah. But and he was a black man. He thought it was funny to make me like, I think he thought it was funny to make me say it.
I don't think it's funny.
I don't think it's funny either. It just, and I just don't ever want to say, I just don't ever, I'm like, my phone hears everything. Even if it's taken out of context, you know, what if in 40 years from now, they're like, Madigan Haggerty like says the N-word. I'm
right.
Like, no.
But I mean, there is a time and place and I feel like it has absolutely been used incorrectly. Quentin Tarantino, I'm looking at you because I really do feel like Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, it's so excessive.
It's excessive and unnecessary. Like, I enjoy some of his movies, but I do think he is problematic and he uses his platform as a writer, going off on a tangent, to sometimes get away with things that he should not get away with.
Yeah.
And using the N-word is one of those things. However, I do believe, just like any other kind of traumatic story that is being told, like if you're covering the Holocaust, somebody has to play a concentration camp guard, you know, like there are things that have to be done in movies, in art, in order to tell a story or get a point across. And if that's the case, then that is different. But yes, in your day-to-day life, as a white person or a non-black person of color, you should not be using that word under really any circumstances.
Not
you don't
even
need
if
to
it's
sing it
in
a
goddamn song. I mean, we mentioned, I think, Hannah Brown very, very briefly when that whole thing went down during the pandemic when she there was like an Instagram video or a TikTok video of her where she said the N-word.
She should have known better.
And she should have known better. And she, I mean, luckily it really seems like she is taken this time to educate herself. I hope that it's true. She's definitely put that out into the world. It seems like she's learned from her experience, which I really hope she had. She kind of went on like radio silence for a while. I think she was aware of how badly she fucked up. And that's the thing, because I can't say that in my life I've never said the word in a song, because when I was young and stupid, I'm sure I did. You know what I mean?
But
and
Hannah Brown is like 25, white, blonde,
from pretty, Alabama.
From Alabama. Yeah. She doesn't get a pass. She doesn't get a pass.
She doesn't get a pass at all. But all I can hope is that
her
she
apology.
Educates. Yeah.
Right. I can accept her apology because it did seem sincere. I can accept her apology while also saying that you have some deep-seated shit you need to work through. If you have this platform, you're from Alabama.
Yeah.
And you didn't know that this was going to be a thing that you shouldn't do on an Instagram live.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know what
and
I mean?
What's her name? The Rachel? Is that the other Bachelorette?
Mm-hmm.
She went off on her for a while. And there are people like, she's being too hard on
should've.
Hannah. I'm like,
no,
no
she should have gone off on her.
And she had Hannah on her podcast. And I guess they had a lot of discussions outside of the public eye, the two of them, about stuff. And I guess she told her off a whole lot and Hannah just kind of sat and listened to it and just
Rachel
tried.
Is not to be fucked with.
She is not to be fucked with at all.
She is not your sassy black friend. She is not your black best friend.
No.
Nope. Okay.
She is not gonna purpose. She's not gonna fall into any of your stereotypes. Best bachelorette ever. All right. So back to rule number 2. Rule number 2 is be white. which I love. You know, don't try to be something you're not. Like, it's, again, it's the white person that tries too hard. You know, it's the person that puts on, you know, the linguistic blackface, he called it, or tries to blend in with their surroundings, when really it's like, if I'm your friend, I just want you to be who you are. You don't have to be something else because of who I am. You know,
what? I think this brings up an interesting point as well, is that, like, there are white people who grew up around black people. Okay. Right. Like, you watch 8 Mile, right? You look at Eminem and you understand that, like, this isn't something that he's putting on necessarily.
Right.
However, he is still a person who grew up with a very white experience. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, even though he grew up around black people, maybe in a lower socioeconomic class, he is not a black person.
Yeah.
His experience is not as a black person. So you don't need to put on these airs of being something that you are not. Especially very often what I see portrayed in the media, and what I'm guessing that he's talking about with this linguistic blackface, is white middle class to upper middle class, usually guys. Sometimes it happens for women as well, although I feel like if they write a white female character that way, it's supposed to be a joke or a caricature.
Yes. One of my examples was actually Lily from How I Met Your Mother, and we did a whole How I Met Your Mother episode and why it's problematic. So I can't remember if we mentioned this one, but do you remember the episode where her friend from high school, Michelle, comes to visit, and then
no,
and she puts on a black scent, like a real, like, really heavy, and then, and the whole gig, like the whole gag of the whole, like, episode is that when Lily walks away and the gang talks to Michelle one-on-one, she doesn't actually talk like that in real life. She's like, oh yeah, Lily just brings that out in me. It's just when they're together, they both put on this facade, and it's that weird, again, it's this weird, like, performative friendship, like, neither of them are being authentic, right, like, with each other.
What I was going to say is, like, if that was a real life scenario, which it's not, but, like, right, if it was a real life scenario, to me, what that would be, if I'm looking at it from that perspective, it would be that the black friend is, again, trying to live up to the expectations of her white friend.
Exactly.
Because she doesn't really talk like that. Why did she start talking like that? Did Lily start talking like that around her? And then the black friend, you know, kind
felt
of
a responsibility to have to live
exactly
up to that expectation.
Exactly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You are exactly right, my dear. Number three is know your role. And they talk about talking to the police for your friend in this little section. And this was written a little over a year ago, I believe. So this is definitely important now. And they say that, you know, if you are, and this was written really funny, but he's like, you know, if you're pulled over by a cop, you know, you need to do all the talking while also conveying to your black friend in, you know, eye sign language that, like, you know, shut up and I'll do all the talking and I'm going to take care of you and things like that. And I think that's really important. And, you know, we do say this a lot, is using your privilege for good. If you are pulled over by a cop and you are with somebody from the black community, you better turn that white privilege up and do what you can to make sure that your friends are safe.
Right. So here's the thing. Color blindness doesn't exist. We've discussed this. It doesn't exist, and it also doesn't exist in friendships. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist in your relationships. If you are in an interracial partnership, romantically with somebody, it also doesn't exist there. You cannot, you have to see and honor the person's color and what that means for them to move throughout the world in order to be their friend. So while you might be white and have white friends and you can look at it as just white friends and you might say, why do I have to treat my black friend any differently? It's because if you are a true friend to a person of color, specifically a black person, then you are not only a friend to them, you are also an advocate and an ally. You have to be.
Yeah.
And if you are not that, then you're not really their friend.
No,
because you don't value them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't value them really.
Exactly. Number five, because we already did number four, is learn things. Take the opportunity to see the world through another perspective and educate yourself independently. So I like this, and I also think that this is something that people can read wrong as well. Again, I'm going to bring up the Joe Biden situation. You know, there is, it is great to be able to look at the world through someone else's perspective, but there has to be education behind it. It can't be like a vacation for the day where you're, what's life like on the other side, or what's life like this way?
Right. This We're is, not undercover bossing this situation.
Exactly. So if you're going to want to learn about another person's perspective, it can't just be about living in the, within the same vicinity as them, or going to their house and knowing their mom and things like that. It does take education to truly understand. And sometimes, yes, being in the home and talking with, you know, families that are different than you is an education, but it is still important, instead of you having to rely on them for information, getting information for yourself to make sure that you are, you know, being appropriate and, you know, not asking stupid questions. Honestly, that's always right. my biggest concern.
And also, well, but here's the thing, true friendships. Yeah. As someone who has been many a Black best friend, and oftentimes the only Black friend in large groups of mostly white people.
Hey, Midwest.
I can say that friendships do go both ways. They do. So, like, if I am your friend and you say something that I don't like or offends me as a Black person, I can say those things to you. I can educate you in that way. But what that means for the white friend in this scenario is that they need to take that, utilize it without getting in their feelings about it. Because right. if you are my friend, I should be able to be vulnerable and honest with you and say, hey, you know what? Like, what you said, it wasn't okay. And here is why it wasn't okay. You're my friend. I love you. I know that what you said, you didn't mean it the way that it came across. But as your friend, I need to let you know that it wasn't okay. Yeah. And in return, as my friend, I need you to say, oh my gosh, thank you for letting me in on that.
Of course.
I will do better moving forward.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we need as friends. And if you can't give that to your Black friend, then you're not really their friend. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. All right. I'm going to get through these last two. Number six is don't partake in cultural appropriation, which we've had a whole cultural appropriation episode. I think this kind of ties into just be white, be yourself, be who you are. You know, I see a lot of people that I know on Instagram, especially white women who date Black men, who partake
oh my God.
In a lot of cultural appropriation. There's a girl I did background with that I literally had to mute her Instagram. I mean, I could just unfollow her. Like, we're not really, really close. I don't know why I muted her, but she's done, like, braids in her hair, like, full braids. I sent you a picture of it, like, forever ago, mm-hmm. and she got them again. And it just makes me feel, like, I know it shouldn't make me feel uncomfortable, but it does make me feel uncomfortable, because it's like, why are you posting this for everyone to see, and why is no one calling you out on it?
Does she have a Black partner?
She does, yeah.
Okay, so I honestly think this should go on our list of things to talk about, because it comes up often, and that is the fetishization of Black men.
Yeah.
There is a huge sexual fetishization of Black men, and I feel like what goes along with that is this idea of the free pass. You see it in friendships as well, but especially in romantic relationships, mostly with white women, with Black men. You don't see it as often with white men and Black women, where they feel like they get a pass on whatever they decide to do. And it very much feels like they want to be in this relationship because it gives them
that
and
pass.
This is the same for that pass, and also that it makes them more interesting.
Yeah.
And I feel like that oftentimes white people feel that way when they enter friendships with people of color or people in the LGBTQ community.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at the Kardashians. You know, mm-hmm. it's like everybody that they come into contact with, everybody they've dated, they just appropriate from. You know what I mean? They don't
right. well,
have their own identities anymore.
They feel like it makes them more interesting, which right. is a real issue, because a lot of white people, the reason why cultural appropriation is such an issue specifically with white people, and why they do it more than other people do it, other groups do it with, you know, other minority groups, is because, in my experience, they feel like their culture is boring,
mm-hmm.
and they can glom on to another culture that they find to be more interesting.
Right.
And
you can't rewrite your own history. Come on.
Right. And it's okay to, you know, admire someone else's culture, but it is not okay to decide that, you know what, my life isn't interesting enough, so I am going to date a black man because it, I think it's a personality trait and it makes me more interesting.
Yeah, it's the same thing as people that say things like, you know, I only date black men or I only date Asian women. You know, it's that, that's...
It's fetishizing.
It's so
and it's
gross.
Insulting. And, you know, as someone who has been fetishized that way and been with people who were like... often would mention that their girlfriend is black, it's dehumanizing.
So yeah,
in a way, yeah, because it boils you down to one thing,
one
and
trait,
again
one part of you.
To bring it back to this like black best friend, sassy black friend kind of trope, that's oftentimes what it does. It makes the character one-dimensional. It boils them down to one thing, and that is to be kind of the magical Negro who comes in and helps solve the white people's problems without ever having to examine any of your own issues. Or if you do examine the black best friend's issues, very often it is riddled with tragedy.
Or it's there in the story to still... move the white character's story forward. Usually, even if it is tragedy, it's something that will maybe wake up the white character or make the white character realize something. It still, you know, plays into
right. Yeah, that
the
very
goal
often
of the
will,
of the main character. You know,
yeah, that very often will happen as well. I mean, the black character in True Blood. It's been like years and years since I've watched that show, but I remember for the first little while they like didn't look into her character pretty much at all, and then when they were like, hey, maybe we should develop this character more. I want to say her name was Tara or Tara or something. When they were like, let's develop her character more, everything about her life was a tragedy.
Ugh.
Right? Like, it was just like she'd suffered abuse, like sexual, physical abuse. Like, she just had a really dark storyline. And not that those stories don't need to be told or they don't happen, but when that is, it's kind of like when we were talking about disclosure, right? Like, when that is the only information that is being taken in through the media, it makes it, if it didn't happen so often, then the occasional clumsy representation
yep.
would be okay. And in that article I was referencing earlier, that's actually what he says. He says, back in the 80s, it was just a pleasant surprise to see a black character in a film or TV show who wasn't committing a crime. It might be time for interracial friendships to move forward to the next level.
Definitely. Well, I'm going to skip number 7 because we're just going on for a while and it's not that important. But I also read something interesting about how the black friend as a buffer goes all the way back to slavery. So slave owners would paint a picture of harmony and love between them and the enslaved that would justify their racial hierarchy. Mm-hmm. There was this guy named George Fitzhugh, who was a supporter of slavery, and he blamed the North for interfering, saying in 1854 that the white Southerner, quote, is the Negro's friend, his only friend.
Okay, would you like to switch places, sir?
Exactly.
If you had the choice, would you switch places
yeah.
with your black enslaved person?
Totally. Mm-hmm. And then after abolition, he like wrote this whole thing where he's just lamenting about the fact that he lost his black friends. And it's like, oh boo-hoo.
Poor fucking you.
Yeah.
You piece of shit. Yeah, I mean, when I was looking a little bit into the history, I think this is from the Afropunk article I read, which is a very good article. I'll link it in the show notes. But it said, the whole sassy black woman or sassy black friend thing has its roots in the classic film eras of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, when most black actresses could expect to play slaves, maids, and little else. Enter the mammy figure, who would make sharp, witty comments mm-hmm. in the background while glamorous white actors and actresses glided across the screen. And then they went on to point out how in 2011, The Help faced very intense criticism
yeah.
because, once again, these black maids existed to... First of all, it was written by a white person.
Yeah.
And then these black maids existed to catapult the white protagonist into a new stage in life while their lives remained static. So like the magical Negro and the black best friend, black domestics in film function to nurture and guide white characters. So that's kind of where this started, that mammy trope, black
yeah.
domestic trope.
And I feel like it changes with like assigned gender and age of the character. You know what I mean? I feel like if it's a man, it's typically the magical Negro. If it's a young woman, it's typically the black best friend. And then if you get
older women,
it's like the mammy character, you know? And it every time it always makes me think of Hattie McDaniel from Gone with the Wind.
Absolutely.
I loved that movie as a kid. It's one that I cannot get through now. It's so long, but I would watch that on rainy days at my cabin. And she was always my favorite because she was funny. And like, you know, now I look back and obviously that's a very problematic role, but also really wonderful because she was the first black woman to ever win an Oscar for that role. So,
which is incredible, but it's so multifaceted.
Oh yeah. It's still tied in with such racism. And she wasn't even able to like sit with the rest of the categories.
Right. And she was able to win an Oscar because she played a role that was deemed to be acceptable by white America at that time.
Exactly.
Which was this kind of slave character, mammy character, domestic character that was not that unhappy about her position.
Oh, right? Exactly.
And that's the problem with Gone with the Wind. I didn't watch Gone with the Wind until I was like 13 or 14. And by the time I watched it, I think I didn't watch it young enough because I realized when I was watching it that I was like, this is really fucked up. I mean, they have lines in that movie about how like, remember the good old days when Tara was in her full glory and we could hear the soft giggle of the Negroes in the slave quarters. And it's just like, what world are you living?
Yeah, it's, I mean, the main characters are racist pieces of shit. It's a horror. I mean, like, I can't get
through
the movie now.
But they're the protagonists, and you're supposed to root for them.
You're supposed to root for them, exactly. But then also, you know, you are still supposed to root for this maid, but because she's, like, silly, you know what I mean?
And happy in her position.
Right, which kind of goes back to what that, you know, George guy was saying after abolition. So I wanted to talk about one character in particular because we had a whole Topanga episode and I think you and I could talk a lot about Angela because so Keegan and I, for those of you that don't know, I used to pick her up from work like almost every day and we would go back to your apartment and we would crochet and paint our nails and watch Boy Meets World. And we were obsessed for like a whole summer. We just like binged Boy Meets World.
I still own the first four seasons on DVD.
Yep. And that's
what we
did.
You can watch the rest on Disney Plus.
No.
And we're not even getting paid by them. So
exactly. So we love Boy Meets World. So that's why I really wanted to bring Angela up to you because I think Angela is a very interesting character. And there's also been some new developments about the actress's experiences on set. And I also just found out that she was like way older than everybody else.
Way older. Yeah.
I didn't realize.
And she didn't look it. She didn't.
She didn't. She so like Sean, her, you know, who played her boyfriend, the character Sean in Boy Meets World was like 17 in real life. And she was like 26 or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. But she, Angela came in late in the season and she is there as
her series.
Or series, sorry. And she is kind of like Topanga 2.0. She has even more wisdom and maturity than Topanga. She, you know, obviously becomes very close friends with her very quickly, and she becomes kind of the mom of the group in a way that kind of overlooks all of these white bumbling idiots. You know what I mean? Kind of looking above
it
all.
Right. Yeah. And you know, at the time when I was watching it, and I haven't seen the later seasons of Boy Meets World, which is where Angela makes her appearances.
You've never seen them?
No, I have,
oh
but I
God.
Haven't
okay.
seen them in quite a while.
Okay.
So I can't speak on it with kind of like this adult feminist mindset, but I can say that when I was watching it initially, I thought that the representation was good. I was so excited to see a black woman and also an interracial relationship, and it made me feel really good. But looking back on some of the moments that I do remember, while I still am so grateful that I had this representation in one of my very favorite shows.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a lot of positive that came with Angela. It was just the fact that she was like the only black character except for the one other teacher that was only in it for a few seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that carries a lot of weight on the character's shoulders, which is going to probably go into what you, the examples you were thinking of.
Right. Well, it's a lot of weight, but also they didn't have to write her like this. Like they did. It's not even that she was written badly, but it is exactly what you were saying in that she fell into this kind of like default mammy stereotype, totally, for lack of a better term, because you had Eric, who was older, right, but still behaved like a child.
Right.
And so she is taking care of everybody, essentially, except for Topanga, which, again, I guess also speaks to the trope of, like, women being responsible and men being allowed to kind of, like, be perpetual man children.
Right. Yeah, the women have to grow up and the men don't.
But I did appreciate, despite, you know, we can talk a little bit about her experiences on the set, but, like, I did appreciate that it did seem to me that the writers, from what I remember, did actually try and, maybe clumsily, but tried to, they never tried to make her white. They never tried to make her a white character. Yeah. They did address the fact that she wasn't white. And one that I remember a lot is that she wrote a paper. She got an A on her paper where she's like, how to maintain black identity with three very white friends.
Oh, you know? I remember that now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I did appreciate that. But again, once again, we could talk. We haven't even given very many examples of black best friends, but they exist in everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have the Peanuts written down as an example. Franklin from the Charlie Brown and the Peanuts.
You've got Franklin. You've got Dion from Clueless. Yep. You've got Donald Faison's character in Clueless as well. Yep.
You've got Corbin Blue and Monique Coleman's characters in High School Musical. Apparently, their names are Chad and Taylor.
Oh, yes, because I did the stage version.
Oh,
yes,
you did?
Chad and Taylor. Which, by the way, who wrote that? Because I've never met one black kid named Chad. I'm sure they exist, but I've never met one.
I don't think I've ever met a black person named Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I have either, but I see that before I see a black Chad. I don't think I've ever met a black Chad.
Maybe.
It is. Then you've got Susie from the Rugrats.
Oh, this.
We've got
Michael Scott and Stanley's relationship from the Office.
Problematic.
Yes.
That relationship.
I mean, it's one of those things, you know, because Michael Scott is portrayed horrible as just being this bumbling idiot. You have to kind of, you're supposed to forgive him for his shortcomings because he's just stupid. That's like why.
Yes, but that is fucked up. That would never work. It would never work now.
As someone who likes the Office. In an actual office environment too, can you imagine your boss treating someone like he treats Stanley and Oscar,
or
for that
matter? Or like he treats Oscar, exactly. Like, yes, we could go, honestly, we should do a whole episode on problematic faves, The Office, because I love The Office.
Yeah.
I think The Office is great, and I understand that it's satire, and it's meant to be poking fun at the fact that he's an idiot, but some people don't pick up on that, and they're just like, what? Michael Scott can say racist shit, and it's funny,
yeah,
so why can't I
say it?
You know?
Yeah. Another one that I had written is the inverted BBF I wrote, and that is That's So Raven.
Okay.
Right? I didn't even think of it that way, but this was from the TVTropes.com website.
I mean, but I would still argue that even though she has a white best friend and it's a black-centered show,
right,
in that it's revolving around a black protagonist and a black family, that Raven is still very much kind of a stereotypical sassy friend.
Oh, 100%.
She does lots of tongue clicks, lots of, you know, neck
moving
twists.
The head around, the snaps.
Yes.
Yeah, she definitely still held that. And then my other two favorite examples, Wayne Brady from Whose Line Is It Anyway? Poor Wayne Brady. I rewatch Whose Line all the time. It's a show for me when I'm sad that I can watch and always feel better.
I also weirdly own that on DVD
for some reason. I love how often Wayne Brady calls out the fact that he is the only black castmate and makes fun of his white castmates, because it kind of is, you know that Wayne Brady is obviously very talented, but it's also very jarring to see, you know, a whole group of white people, and then you see what we've been come to call the token black character, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and with someone like Wayne Brady, though, it also makes me wonder if, he's poking fun on it, you know, poking fun at it, but at the same time, like, we can laugh at it because Wayne is laughing at it,
right,
but it kind of, by him laughing at it and kind of like brushing it off, it kind of gives everyone else, i.e. white America, permission to brush it off as not a problem.
Right.
And it kind of is a problem, that there was almost never, even when they'd bring guests in, which they did every episode, And I love that show. Yeah. I'm not trying to like shit on it, but I am saying like, I do think that there is this expectation for kind of like funny song and dance black people to laugh at their own oppression.
Right.
And it, because it makes white audiences more feel comfortable. More comfortable.
There was a video that I saw very recently, and it was a later season because it was Wayne Brady with Aisha Tyler. And there was something, mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was. Gosh, I have to find it. But it was actually it was a joke. You know, they were doing the show, but it was something really serious. And I believe that it involved like police brutality. It's like people that would be safe with the cops.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
I did. Yes, I did.
I'll have to find it because it's very jarring because he's making a joke. He's doing it in a funny way, but also like the audience doesn't really know how to respond. Aisha Tyler is like, yeah, you know, and kind of laughing at how he's doing it. But
well, it is, you know, that's another thing is like black people are always praised for their humor,
right.
Our humor, like, and black Twitter always kind of is very good at making light of racist situations,
right.
Or making memes out of it and making it funny. But And that's amazing. I fucking love that black people do that. I think it's incredible. But also, I don't think that it should be overlooked by white people that that is a coping mechanism,
right.
That has been developed because of years of oppression.
Right. And that's like, why I liked oftentimes, that. You know, it was set up as a joke. And then the punchline, everybody was like, it's not funny. Like, it's just real,
right.
And sad.
Right.
You know?
So when it comes to like black best friends, you know, sassy black friends, etc., they often act as kind of this spirit guide to white protagonists.
Yeah.
Very similarly to the way that the magical Negro trope does. And in that same vein, the way that they are able to kind of act that way is that the characters are so one-dimensional that they don't appear to have anything going on in their own lives except for to coach white characters through their lives.
Exactly.
And in that way, like, so first of all, they're not fully developed. And secondly, in the way that they're developed, because very often they are written by white writers, directed by white people, especially when it comes to the sassy black woman, sassy, angry black friend trope, they end up coming across as a caricature of a black person.
Definitely.
Or a caricature of a black woman instead of being this wholly, fully rounded human being,
right.
Who has like interests and problems of his or her own, you know, it ends up being all about the white person.
Yeah.
With this added spice of black people.
Right. So let's talk about the damages that it does for, you know, children growing up watching these things. And, you know, for me, I think of the idea that, you know, I was always able to find somebody that I related to in every show, whether it be a cartoon or live action, there was always going to be a white character. And the biggest upset for me was that I never got to be the popular blonde character. I think I brought this up twice tonight. You know, I always wanted to be the main character because she was like blonde and popular and pretty. And in real life, I always wanted to be that way. But I was like the sidekick, best friend character in that. But I was always able to find stories that I related to. So I don't really have that experience growing up. Was that something that you were aware of growing up, or is it something that you've been more aware of as you've gotten older?
Absolutely. I mean, as somebody who has been acting my whole life, it was always something that I was very well aware of.
Yeah.
That my opportunities were going to be limited because it is less often, even on stage.
Where you, it like, could be anybody.
I mean, and I've been nominated for theater awards.
Right.
The theater awards that I get nominated for are black best friends, essentially, always.
Really?
Like our black best friends, yes.
Ugh.
And I love those parts. They're quirky, they're fun. Part of it is because I don't necessarily look like a leading lady in a lot of ways, so that's part of it.
I think you do.
But thank you. I think you do too.
Oh my God, thank you.
But like, so that is part of it, but it's also largely because, you know, and I'm getting ready to go and help start a Black Theater Alliance for this reason, because growing up, it felt like I was never going to get leading roles. Right. My role was always going to be a side character, a supporting character. I was never going to get leading character. So I've known that forever. And then in addition to that, you know, when we're talking about like real life kind of consequences beyond just the representation not being present, the representation that is present very often, especially for Black women are routinely portrayed in television and film as, you know, sassy, and they do the neck rolls and they have the major attitude, yeah. and they are labeled this like angry Black woman. And there have been studies done where most African American women will say that they believe that these depictions on screen have real world consequences.
Yeah.
For them in their dating life, their jobs, their careers, because of the representation of what that is on screen.
Right.
So, yes, to answer your question, I've been aware of all of that my whole life.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap up?
Well, I kind of just wanted to wrap it up really with this again, at by Sarah on Instagram. They kind of wrapped up their slides with something that I found to be, you know, just they said it really well. So they said, give every character depth, and not only will you break free of the Black best friend archetype, the story will be richer, realer, and more complex. And I think that that is so important beyond just for you and I who went to film school.
Right.
You know what I mean? Beyond all of the other stuff, which is massively important that we have talked about, just in the interest of creating good art.
For real.
In the interest of creating good art, you need to allow every character to experience real depth so that the story can feel real,
right,
and rich.
Yeah, the stories that we're watching on TV and in movies and reading in books should reflect real life. You know what I mean? Even if it is fiction, even if it is make-believe, you know, even in science fiction, there's so much that ties to humanity in real life. And
exactly.
So by having, you know, richer characters, it's only going to help you. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's kind of, yeah. Like, why are you fighting it? Don't fight
it. Well, because it's like this halfway, you know, there's, you know, we're giving you the diversity. You know what I mean? Like, it just kind of feels like it's a handout in a way. So hopefully, you know, we get more Black writers in the writers' rooms, more Black casting directors. We get more Black authors. Just Black artists in general, like, need to just start getting into those rooms somehow to get their voices heard, because that's the only way that you're going to have a true mm-hmm. representation of your character is by having that experience behind it.
Right. You need to consult somebody. If you're a white man and you are writing a Black female character, you need to run that shit by at least one Black woman.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, I would say, if it's
10
an
sources.
Experience, yeah, if it's an experience that you have literally no familiarity with, you, because again, Black people aren't monoliths, mm-hmm. so run that shit by a few Black women and let them all give you notes and take all of that into consideration so that you can have just a better piece of media. It's important. We are no longer in the 70s, 80s, and 90s where we can just say, oh my gosh, what a relief it is that there are Black people in this movie and that they're not drug dealers, yep. that they're actually friends to the main character.
We are far beyond
it
that.
It is more than that.
Yeah.
And we need to allow for that.
We do. Oh, well, I hope that you all enjoyed this episode. I really did. I'm glad that we did something
Me
nice
too.
And lighthearted, not too research heavy. We just got to kind of chat and hang out. So I hope that you all enjoyed listening to it. If there's anything that you want to add, go ahead and email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or direct message us on Instagram at @angryneighborhoodfeminist. We also have a Twitter that we sometimes use @YAMFpodcast.
YANFpodcast. F
podcast. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with the other listeners in the group page. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps us out so much and we really appreciate it. And we also really appreciate it when you listen to us on Radio Public. It's a free way for you to listen and it helps us out just a little bit. All right. With all that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.